When you hear the phrase soft as steel, what do you think of? While the word steel might conjure up images such as massive high-rise buildings, where does the soft part come in? And what exactly does this mean in our work and in our lives? Welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran, featuring engaging conversations with a wide range of industry leaders around soft skills, how we practice love, inclusion, social justice, and compassionate leadership that's everlasting in the workplace. And now, here's Dennis Duran.
I'm especially pleased with my guest today, Stephanie Paul, who's gone to great extent to bring us our conversation with the background of flowing water. We'll enjoy that throughout our conversation, unless my engineer finds a way to get it out. But I kind of like it, Steph, and we both have distinctive voices, so it's not a problem. I'm really interested to meet you for a variety of reasons. One, your background and your career progression is really interesting. You're entrepreneurial. You're doing a lot of different things. You're doing them all well, as best I can tell. And I think that we have a lot of very similar thoughts, even though we're operating from different vantage points with regards to something I know that you are interested in, and that is people. And so, you know, right off the bat, we have that common thought. You talk about people in a variety of ways. And in fact, I had a chance to view your introduction of taking the DISC in depth. DISC is something I'm very familiar with. I know you're expert in it. And I think it's an incredibly valuable tool to help individuals. And I think this is about the way you said it, but you kind of put the precedence in place in terms of why it's such a valuable experience. And that's the way I'll describe it. And that is that I think you believe pretty firmly that a person's success in going about their day-to-day activities, whether in a business setting or otherwise, starts with understanding themselves, both strengths and weaknesses. And that in and of itself equips them to be able to do a better job of understanding others.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Is that about right?
Yeah, that's dead on, Dennis. You're
all
dead
right.
on.
Well, I guess we're done then. I guess let's move on to another topic. And I think we both also agree very strongly that humor is an important quality for people to possess.
Absolutely.
And helps to blend all the different behavioral styles in a way that's very sensible. Just share your thoughts. I mean, again, you have a tremendous amount of knowledge about DISC and even its origins, but just talk with me for a few minutes about your views with regards to its importance, what things you've learned, how you're helping the people that you coach learn. Because again, regardless of the industry, again, you know, I'm in the construction industry, it's all about people. You know, everything is about people. And in that industry, we haven't done a good job of focusing on that part. That's why sometimes I have to tie people to a chair to make them, you know, go online and take a brief DISC assessment so they can gather what I refer to as facts. Share your thoughts about the whole journey around DISC understanding and personal growth.
Yeah, you know, when I first started to know what DISC was, my business coach introduced it to me originally and put me through the assessment. And I didn't think terribly much of it. In fact, I didn't particularly like some of the results that came back. However, over the years, over the last sort of 10, 12 years, I've been certified in it. I'm also certified in other assessments, including a 360 for leadership. However, DISC is probably, for me, one of the most interesting because it's not just about self. You can actually use the DISC assessment report to learn to understand others in their observable behavior, understand their prominent style, and then approach communication to that style and adjust your communication so that you get an efficient and an effective conversation or communication from that opposite style or the same style. You know, where if somebody has the same style as you, you tend to approach communication the same way and behavior the same way, and you feel, oh, yes, we're both part of from the same tribe. But if you're with an opposing style, it's not as easy, and people sort of look at it like, oh, this person's really difficult to deal with. And it's not that they're difficult per se, it's just that they're different in the way they approach communication and their style of behavior. And when we understand that and we can see and observe somebody else's behavior before we open our mouth, we can usually assess what their prominent style is and approach it in a manner that is less confronting and more open and pleasing to them so that they can come to the table quicker.
You said when you approach the disc, you talked about, again, observable behaviors. Give our listeners an example of, or examples of, what I if I were equipped to be able to notice, what observable behaviors I would see as an example in the dominant style of behavior, which is probably the one that's the most pronounced in many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. So in DISC, for those who have not heard of it or needs to dust off their memory a little bit, D stands for dominance, how you approach problems and challenges. It does not mean how dominant you are per se. It's just a definition of what the D stands for. And so dominant people tend to be fast-paced, very task-oriented. A lot of people who are entrepreneurs or C-suite executives tend to have D in their profile. And then I stands for influence, how you influence and persuade others to your way of thinking. Eyes are very chatty. They often like to talk a lot and tell stories and be very familiar and friendly with other people. Then S stands for steadiness, how you approach the pace of the way you do things. And people with a high S tend to, they don't tend to come to the table as quickly with conversation. They listen more. They're slower paced. They trust later. They don't trust out of the gate. They're more observant, and they take time to come round. And then C stands for compliance, how you to comply to the rules and regulations set by others, or how naughty you are. I like to think you don't have a lot of C. You tend to be one that breaks rules. Certainly the high D's are like that. But then the high C's are, they're more detail and data driven. They will take time to make sure that they've got all their information correct before they get back to you. They are task oriented, but they're slower paced, where the I and the S are people oriented, and the I is faster paced and the S is slower paced. So I tend to find over the years that I've been doing this and the amount of reports that I've seen, and I'm sort of giving a generalization, but your high D's, and you don't see very pure styles very often. Most styles are blended. You have a little bit of other styles. You do get to see a pure D, I, S, C occasionally in profiles, but it's pretty rare. Most people are blended. But they have a prominent style. So when I talk about that prominent style, that D, that's what I'm talking about, is the one that is the highest on the graph. And your D's are like your entrepreneurs, your C-suite executives, your definitely leadership. Not all leadership has to have high D, but I generally see it in those profiles. Then your I's are your salespeople, people who are in customer service or hospitality tend to have high I. S tend to be more people in human resources and philanthropy and nonprofits. And then your C's tend to be your forensics, your accountants, your people who like to get down in the science and the weeds and the details of things. So that's a generalization, but that might help people think about, who do I know that is like this style? And then you will probably find, if you ever saw their DISC assessment, that they actually fall into that category, and that's the prominent style on their DISC graph.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a terrific explanation. Thank you for that very much. So my follow on is to say, when you're working with, let's talk upper level leadership, C-suite. When you're working with C-suite executives, how do you get them to a point where they actually they may recognize that there's value in what you've explained to them about themselves? They may say, this is really helpful. I'm sure I'll be able to benefit from using this. But how do you get it to stick? How do you get them to, they may understand it, but then the session ends, and you go home, and they go to the next meeting. What's needed in your experience in order to get that level of leaders, and then obviously it cascades down through an organization, but it has to start with those leaders. How do you get them really to not simply buy in intellectually to what you've explained to them, but to buy into it and operationalize it and how they go about leading from that moment going forward?
You know, you p- You're asking a very interesting question, because I just want to cover something first and foremost, is if you have somebody who doesn't want to be coached or isn't interested in being trained or isn't interested in learning anything new, you can't do anything with that person. You may as well be talking to a rock. You know, I literally had a venture capitalist come to me recently and said the CEO of one of their startup companies needed some help with his presentation and his pitch. They were raising money. And I said to him, well, before we get into more conversation, is he coachable? And I think he was quite surprised by me asking that question. And I said, because there's no point you guys spending a ton of money with having me come in and work with somebody who's not interested and isn't coachable. And I've had that in the past, and I do not take it on in the future or in the present anymore. And so if you have somebody who is coachable, who is open, who is interested and wants to do the work, then I give them homework. I give them things to observe, to practice, and whatever their goal is, whatever they're working on, whatever their opportunity for growth is, that's sort of where we work, we do the work. And so the assessments that I use, like DISC, I also use emotional intelligence, EQ, I use 12 driving forces, which is a internal psychological motivator assessment to see what motivates people around things like knowledge and utility and resources and others. And I use a soft skill assessment that has 25 soft skills where you are developed in things from leadership, negotiation, customer service, or, you know, resiliency, things like that. I use it as all the assessments as kind of a cornerstone when I'm working with a one-to-one scenario. When I'm working with a team training, that can be completely different. Maybe we don't use assessments at all. We're specifically working on something that the leadership team have asked me to come in and train on. So there's a few different things that I work on around communication, storytelling, presenting, pitching, things like that. And so I really use the assessments as a cornerstone, and then we move into like a goal planning session. You know, we do the debrief, we go through all the findings, we discuss what might be an eye-opener, what might have been a blind spot that they didn't realize that they had to work on, their strengths, their opportunities for growth, their issues and problems that they're dealing with now, and, you know, what their goals are for the future, and if there is any kind of sort of career trajectory that they want to take hold of and work with. So it really kind of depends on the goals and the person as to what we do next. But there's always homework. And if they're not doing the homework and they're not diligent about like practicing some of the things that we talk about or working on, then I usually fire them.
And she says that and laughs after she says it. And she laughs again.
I don't. Well, you know, there's an expression which I quite like, and it's called an ask-hole. And it's the person that keeps coming for the advice. And they're just like an ask-hole. You keep giving the advice. You keep giving them the work to do. And then they never do anything with it. It's just like a black hole that all that advice and all that energy gets sucked up into the universe somewhere and spat out God knows where. But they don't do anything. And I'm very intentional. I really am here to serve and here to help. And I want my clients to be intentional. So
I need a break, because I'm trying not to continue to laugh. I've never heard that. I'm going to use it. I will attribute it to you gladly, and I'll preface it by saying a new friend of mine, but I've never heard about an ask hole. I think that's just magnificent. It reminds me of a comedian from Finland. His name is Ismo. And he has some monologues on some very funny things involving the words in the English language, how those words can be used in so many different ways. And he rails against things like silent letters, why is there an extra D, or why is there an E on the end? You can't even hear it when the but ask call, my gosh. Oh, Stephanie, this is bonus time here on our little conversation. All right, let's come back. I think the question that you then responded to and talked about, I think is really valuable, because again, the place that I'm living is trying to get people to understand the importance of knowing what their qualities are. And obviously, when you talk about observable behaviors, and I define soft skills, and I don't know if I've said this to you before, I define soft skills for my purposes as being a person's attributes, behaviors, a manifestation of their personal values. That's what I call soft skills. So when I hear someone described as being a problem solver or a negotiator without a qualifying adjective like a superior or superb problem solver or an outstanding negotiator or a great listener or a great speaker, those adjectives take a skill and make it into a quality. That's kind of my world. Does that make some sense? Does that make sense to you?
Oh yeah, I actually have a 7-minute with a downloadable PDF worksheet training video on commanding presence. And I talk about in that training video, and I'm happy to share it with you. You can give Please. It away to your audience. And your behavior, or as you said, soft skills, your behavior, whether you know your values or not, are depicted by your values and what you value. So you will show up based on what you value. And so some people don't actually know their values, therefore they don't really know what their behavior is like, and therefore they don't really know how they show up. Mm-hmm. And so a funny story that I'll share with you is I went to a woman in bio meeting, and I got there early, and I was the first person there, and I sat down at the boardroom table, and there was probably about 16 people coming to this meeting, and I hadn't met anyone there. It was my first time. And it was sort of a networking, but there was some training aspect to it. And then another woman arrived, and she sat next to me, and she started asking me questions. And she said, asking me things about what's going on and what time to think. And I kept saying, I don't know. And because I didn't know, it was my first time there. And eventually I turned to her and I said, who do you think I am? And she said, aren't you the leader of this group? And I said, no, this is my first time here. I've never been here before. And I said, what makes you think that I'm the leader of the group? And she goes, just your presence. So in that training video, I sort of talk about, how that story came about, how to get to that, is that I had psychological comfort, which is one of the exceptional things about presence that Joe Navarro talks about in his book, Be Exceptional. I was confident, but it was all in my behavior. I hadn't said a word. Mm-hmm. She kept asking me these questions just by the way I was sitting there and my mannerisms and quote unquote my behavior. I showed her leadership. Mm-hmm. And that's because of my values and how they literally ooze out of every pore in your body when you really make your decisions based on your values and you stick to your guns and you have integrity. And it's that gives you commanding presence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's incredible. It's so true. At the pedestrian level, we talk about our consideration of leaders that we'd consider to be real leaders. Because there are a lot of people out there that are called leaders who are not, in terms of how they present themselves, what they really are. My mentor, a guy named Steve Farber, refers to the leaders who are not real leaders as posers. So they have a title, they've got a position, they may have power and authority that goes along with that, but they're not putting themselves out there in the fullest sense of being a leader.
Leadership is not a title or a role.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that's always it continues to fascinate me as an example that I'm here in this area in New York to do a 2-day training program for supervisors. These are in the construction industry, and I will have individuals ranging in age from their mid-20s to their mid-60s for 2 days. One of the things we'll talk about is their personality. In fact, it's the first subject in this 2-day program. And the way I introduce it is, the next hour that we spend together is the most important hour in this entire 2-day program. And I talk about DISC, and I give them an acid test DISC profile, which has proven to be a good correct initial assessment. And then we talk about it. And, for those individuals, some may initially resist, and it really is more a function of them never never really being motivated to take a look at themselves. They've just kind of, you know, kind of gone through years of their lives, just kind of going along. And depending on how they were raised, their parents didn't bring any attention to different aspects of their experiences and how they would mold who they are as young and then older adults. Why do you think it's so, it's such an important thing for us to be talking about, and it's not just part of human behavior?
You know, that's a really good question. You brought up, you know, if your parents haven't sort of shown you that type of thing, you know, then you sort of grow up and it's hard or can be difficult to look at things internally. Most people go through life getting out of bed, doing the thing that they do that day, and then go back to bed and don't really dig around inside internally and figure out who they are and why they are and why they do what they do and what's connected to what their triggers are. You know, you've probably heard of a SWOT analysis that people do with your look at your strengths, your weaknesses, your opportunities for growth. Normally the T stands for threats, but I do one with my clients that the T stands for triggers. Figure out what your triggers are. When I first moved in with my partner, he's got a couple of kids, and I did the SWOT analysis for myself because I was getting triggered. And I was like, on certain things with, you know, moving in with after being alone for a while and then having children attached to it, there were things that were being triggered, and some of them were from my past. And some of them were from my childhood with family, because this was now with this dynamic, it was the first time I'd lived in a dynamic like this since my having my family with my, my parents and my siblings. So, you know, it was really interesting to go through that process, but some people are not open to it because sometimes you find wounds that are hiding underneath something that you haven't thought about. There are things there that, you know, psychology stuff that hasn't been dusted off and looked at as to why you do certain things or why you behave certain ways. And I have a theory which I am still trying to find research around, hasn't popped up yet. Maybe it exists and I just haven't seen it, that the way we communicate and the behaviors that we have, we don't really learn them at school and we don't learn them at college unless you really go into some form of study around that. And you get to the workplace, and what you bring to the workplace with you is the language, the communication style, and the behaviors that you're taught at home growing up and your family dynamic. And if you don't look at that and what that is, you know, then you'll never have any form of growth, and you'll always sort of be stunted with that style. Some people, you know, get caught. Taught amazing behaviors and communication style in their family, and some people don't. Some people's families are dysfunctional, and it's just, you know, the cards that you're are drawn when you're born into that family. So it can be very painful to look at stuff. I've had clients where on our very first meeting to do our goal planning or going through the debriefing of the assessments, you know, in tears. Because they realize all I do is ask questions, you know, I ask questions about certain things and sometimes we get into areas that can be quite personal and then they're like, and then they're apologizing to me. I'm so sorry. I shouldn't be crying. I'm like, no, you absolutely should be crying because we just discovered something that could be holding you back as, you know, as a person. Now I'm not a psychologist and I do not market myself in any way, shape or form, but I am a trained life coach and a certified leadership coach. And I am trained in the assessments and how to train in them as well as around them and use them and debrief them. And so some of those things that come up can be pretty sticky. And it's so amazing for me to watch the growth and development with my clients, whether they're 30, 50, 60, I've had some in their 70s that I've worked with, when they just see a different way of looking at things. When you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change, you know, and just to see the growth and development and the light, the energy lifts off, the weight goes, and they don't have imposter syndrome anymore. And they're more, committed, or they're more confident, or, you know, they can lead without authority and you know, just be more curious and be more open as people in general. And it's a wonderful thing. And it's for me, it's why I do what I do. I love watching people shift and change and grow and develop.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, I like to say that that who we are today is the sum of from birth, the sum of everything that we were taught, everything that we learned, everything that we experienced. And a lot of that experience is in the family. And, you know, in my case, I'll just use myself as an example. I'm considered to be a fairly good public speaker. I had no formal training in public speaking. I don't even think I took a communications class in college. If I did, I think I may have slept through it. But actually, I slept through a lot of my classes in college, and that, so here I am. But my father was actually a missionary priest, and was a gifted speaker. In fact, every year, and I didn't learn that he was a priest until I was, I think, about 11 or 12 years old. But every year at our church, after he began going to church with us, which in the early years of my life, he did not, because he had been, I forget the term, excommunicated. But he was allowed to rejoin the church. And every year, one of the things he did was he was asked to read the long form of a big portion of the Bible referred to as the Passion. And this is done on the week before Easter. But he was also just people just loved him. And he had a gift for talking to people. So that's an experience that somehow I was able to capture. Related to assessments, I went to a leadership program as a participant at the age of 50. The age is important. It's a nice round number. But in that program, they did what would be equivalent to taking all of the assessments that you are certified and utilize in your practice. And we took a whole battery of assessments, including one actually was referred to as the Highland Battery. I don't know if you're familiar with that, that group of assessments. But in the Highland Battery, one of the things that I learned was what my style of learning was. You know, there's auditory, visual, and tactile learners. I learned that I was an auditory learner, that I didn't learn things by looking at them, by seeing them, which provided me an explanation with the help of a coach who was part of that experience to understand that was an explanation of what I didn't experience at a very young age, which was reading. As an activity within the family. And so as I grew older, I did reading that I needed to do. But I also, as a young adult, and even into my later years, up until 50 years old, I would go to a cocktail party. And again, back 20 and 30 years ago, one of the routine conversation starter questions at a lot of cocktail party was, have you read a good book lately? And my answer was always, I need to go get another drink. So a little bit of humor there, a little bit of humor. But those are two personal illustrations of what a lot of people don't have the opportunity or don't recognize that it may be helpful to me. And again, Carolyn Dweck uses these terms. I saw something in your video that suggested you might be familiar with her body of work and her book entitled Mindset. And she talks about two mindsets. One is a fixed mindset, which is what a lot of people suffer with through their entire lives. And then you have a growth mindset, which basically says you can learn, you can change, all kinds of great things can happen to you right up until you take your last breath. All you got to do is say, I want to, and do the work to get there. Mm-hmm. In short, the answer to the question, you know, are you coachable? And you said that early on in this conversation, and what you've done is you've created what I think is going to be the byline or the title of this episode, because that's what this is all about. And in the context, and this is kind of our last topic, because we are at the end of our time together. You and I could go on for another hour
easily.
Yeah, but what I want you to comment on is. All of the work that you do and coaching and working with individuals and with teams, how do you think that work benefits their view with regards to human beings and the fact that we're all different from each other, and that we continue to struggle as a society with recognizing differences as just that, but not as things that hamper the ability to relate to another person, to build a relationship with another person. What thoughts do you have around that?
I'm going to draw on a few different colleagues and friends of mine who are leadership coaches and trainers who have given me nuggets over the years, and themselves have also been authors of books. So I recently actually did a training for a client success team, and they're essentially the conduit between the client and the technology, right? So they're there to make sure that the technology and the client's taken care of, and they sort of make sure that everything sort of works really well. And they really wanted me to bring to the table leading without authority, communication, being able to be good at presenting and active listening and things like that. So those were the things that were predominantly in the training and what we talked about, and storytelling. Mm-hmm. And one of my colleagues, Mark Goldson, who wrote a book called Just Listen, he really talks about, and he actually came and spoke to my Woman in Leadership Mastermind recently, about people need to feel felt. And that's something that's really stuck with me. You know, you mentioned, you know, how do we deal with, you know, all this, the differences in society and cultures and things like that. Mm-hmm. Well, at the end of the day, we're all human beings. We're not cats, you know, which is why you can take an assessment like DISC and it can sort of dial in pretty much exactly what your profile is by you answering questions. And I had a conversation with a psychologist friend of mine who's a forensic psychologist. And I said to her, you know, let's just say people are cats and, you know, we're lions and tigers and leopards and, you know, we had stripes or whatever. Have you ever seen a tiger with duck feet? And she said, no, it doesn't exist. We're all cats. And that's why things like DISC are able to, you answer a few questions and they spit out a report there, and then you go, oh my God, how does this thing know who I am? Right. Mm-hmm. So, and one thing about human beings is that we need to feel felt, we need to feel heard. So active listening is a skill that needs to be taught and learned if mm-hmm. you really want to be able to connect and communicate with others. And that includes nonverbals. You know, a large percentage of how we communicate has nothing to do with what we say verbally, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is why values are incredibly important and they depict our behavior, because you have to be congruent with your actions and your words, or people do not trust you. And mm-hmm. that is an organic thing that happens with the limbic system in the brain, because we have over 4,000 human behaviors. Some of them are micro expressions, and the limbic system reads that stuff really well. So if you're not congruent with your words and your behaviors, your limbic system's going, I just don't trust that guy. It's a gut mm-hmm. feeling, and mm-hmm. it's real. It's biological. Mm-hmm. So these things are incredibly important, which is why DISC is so helpful, just going back to the top of our conversation, because you can learn to read the main style of somebody and be observant about their behavior and approach them in a way, because you've just sat there for a few minutes and listened, mm-hmm. meaning when I just say, not necessarily to what they're saying, but what they're doing, how they're behaving, and then you can approach them so that they feel felt, right? Mm-hmm. I had an incident, and it wasn't because I was trying to influence and persuade on purpose, but when I'm staying at a hotel, I was recently at a Woman in Leadership conference that I was training at, and we were staying in the villas, so it was a separate section to the main hotel, and we had our own reception and our own gym and all that kind of jazz. And every day I went down and I saw the receptionist there. I was like, hi, how are you? And if it was a different one, I'd ask them what their name was, and I'd spend a little time chatting with them. And at the end of the week, we were there for 6 days, I needed something printed, and this hotel is not the hotel where you can get the receptionist to print you something at the desk. It was a big fancy hotel where they would send you off to the business center to go and pay for it yourself. And I just happened to have built a relationship with this young lady in my villa, but she was on the main receptionist desk that day. And I walked past her and I said, do you know where I can get something printed? And she said, what do you want printed? And I was like, oh, it's just a few pages for my learning team that I'm training. And she said, how many? And I said, I need 8 copies. And she goes, color or black and white? And I said, oh, black and white's fine. And she goes, give me 5 minutes, email it to me. And I emailed it to her. And I went to the bathroom and I came back, and she came out from reception and she handed it to me in a green folder. And I said, oh my God, you've got my favorite color. How did you know? She said, I just guessed. And I said, do you know how amazing you are? Mm-hmm. And then the next day, I asked for a late checkout and she happened to be at reception and she gave me an extremely late checkout at no cost and said, shh, don't tell anyone. Now, I didn't ask for all of that. I was merely, she chose to go above and beyond and what she could, her capacity and use her power, her own influence and persuasion, because I had spent an entire week making her feel felt.
Yes.
With my conversation with her. All I did was be nice and polite and present.
Yes. Yes. What a nice story and a great way to end this first conversation between you and I. Will you come back to the Soft to Steal podcast sometime next year and talk with me some more?
Absolutely. I'd love to, Dennis. That would be amazing.
Have we got more to think? Because we didn't get into storytelling.
No.
I also didn't get into, and this is very disappointing, hearing more about your stand-up comedy, that part of your background. That was impressive because I'm pretty funny when I stand up. And it was even funnier when I fall over, but that's a whole nother story.
Oh, don't do that.
No, we try not to. But are you coachable? Are you coachable?
Yeah.
I think that's what we've had a great conversation about and so many other things. Thank you so much for being my guest on the Soft to Steal podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Dennis. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for joining us today for this episode of the Soft to Steal podcast with your host, Dennis Duran. Dennis is the author of Soft to Steal and a leading speaker and trainer for organizations across many industries and verticals. To learn more about the work Dennis is doing to activate soft skills in the workplace, contact him at DennisDuranSpeaking.com. Be sure to check out his book, Soft to Steal, on Amazon or wherever books are sold. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you'd like to get your podcasts. And please remember to share this episode with your friends, colleagues, and anyone you feel would benefit from the conversation. We'll see you next time on the Soft to Steal podcast with Dennis Duran.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.